try and look at Megillah Esther. We have Bezes Hashem 3 weeks, three Tuesdays until Purim, I believe. And more than any other sefer in Tanakh, I think, it's very hard to understand the Megillah without what Chazal tell us. And just to take a portion like we often do in the Torah and try to look at a few psukim and understand those is very, very difficult when it comes to the Megillah. And also, the Gemara spends so much time elaborating and filling in details of the story that seem to be missing that sometimes I think we believe that they're actually written in the Megillah. And to say anything to the contrary, or at least to raise a possibility to the contrary, is very foreign. If you read the Psukim alone, it just seems like it's a nice story, and it is a nice story. But it doesn't seem, meaning what exactly put it as a sefer in Tanakh, what are we supposed to learn, and what deeper lessons are there, is hopefully part of what we'll try and figure out. But if you look at just a few examples of things that I think are normally assumed to be in the Psukim, where if somebody can show me them in the Psukim, I'd be very happy. But what happened to Vashti? Does not say anywhere in the Megillah in front of me that Vashti was killed. That she was removed from being the queen. It doesn't say she was killed. I think everybody knows, every child knows that Vashti was killed. Doesn't say it. Why did she refuse to come? Megillah doesn't say. Chazal tell us, I mean, all these interesting midrashim, but we don't have any idea from the simple reading of the Psukim why she refused to come. It just says that she refused to come. I'm willing to, if anybody finds something to the contrary, you can let me know. There's something else which is interesting, which isn't a problem per se. I think it's true, which is that I don't think anywhere openly in the entire Megillah there's a conversation between two Jews. I think. If somebody shows me differently, I'm happy to be proven, to be shown to be wrong. I don't think it openly, it says that Mordechai told something, meaning Esther says, she sends everything through messengers, and it says that she didn't reveal her identity because Mordechai told her, but that the actual conversation, I don't think is recorded. I don't know why, it's just kind of interesting. Who suggested killing Vashti? So we all know it's Haman. But it doesn't say that in the Megillah either. Okay, just a few examples. So again, hard to take a small section. So what I want to try to do is, as a Hashem, in 3 weeks to do an overview. I'm not going to say the entire Megillah, because I don't think that's possible, but an overwhelming majority of the Megillah, if we finish, maybe we can have our own party. But we'll see what happens. I'm mostly, again, not exclusively going to try and go through the story with the Perush of the Malbim. The Malbim, in a few places, fills in a lot of gaps just in terms of just understanding the Psukim of the Megillah and understanding the significance of the story. And yes, I think what sometimes will be viewed as a new perspective on a lot of the details that seem to just be, you know, taking up space or superfluous. And then also filling in some things I was given as a present on Friday, this beautiful sefer, Hesterim Be'Esther, from Rav Rivlin from Karmi Avna, and filling in a few things from that as well. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Perek Aleph Pasuk Aleph Megillas Esther, page 1252 in the back of your Chumashim. Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, it was in the times of Achashverosh, Shu Achashverosh, he is Achashverosh HaMolech Mehodu Bar Kush, the ruler from Hodu until Kush, Shava Vasir Mayam Medina, ruler of 127 countries. Seems a little bit repetitive. Right? In times of Achashverosh, he is Achashverosh. Why does it repeat his name? Additionally, this pasuk is the only time in the entire Megillah, I think I'm going to go on a limb on this one also, that Achashverosh's name appears without being called Hamelach Achashverosh, or just referring to him as Hamelach without the Achashverosh. Never, except for the opening pasuk of the Megillah, do we find him just referred to as plain old Achashverosh. Why? What's the significance of that? By Yamim Ahim, in that time, Kishevet HaMelech Achashverosh, when the king Achashverosh was sitting Al Kisei Malchuso on his royal throne, Asher B'Shushan HaBira. It's also interesting that it identifies Shushan HaBira. Was that the place where the capital was? Is there something different about this? Why is it important to throw in that Shushan is the capital city? Bishnas Shalosh Lemalcho. In the third year, Asam Ishtel Chol Sarav Avadav Chel Paras Madaya Parshim Sarem Medinos Lefanav. He makes this large feast for everybody. Why is he making a feast? Doesn't say why. Now it's going to tell us one reason he does it. One is Baharo Soas Osher Kivo Malchus. So he wants to show off his wealth. So how great is Yomim Rabim Shmonim Mas Yom, 180 days. And the psukim go on. Then he makes an additional meal for 7 days for all the people of Shushan. In the courtyard of the king.
180 wasn't enough.
Exactly. Why does the Megillah tell us any of this? Who cares that this?
It's a 6 month party.
Right. You wonder who is running the country. Who is running? Right, but why is that significant to us? Again, this is being written in Megillah. The fact that he did it, okay, so that's what he thinks is important in life.
I guess he wants to know how powerful he was.
Not as far as we know.
It says he's the Achashverosh that, you know, afterwards.
It doesn't say who ha Achashverosh, it says he is Achashverosh who ruled. Right. The fact that it certainly is repetitive.
Right.
It is repetitive, and I think it's coming to.
Unless he had a son who was
Achashverosh. Right. I don't think we have any record of that, but yeah, certainly possible. Okay, Churak Arpas, Zechus, Achuz, Bechavivut, Zragaman, Agud, Chesaf, Amudei Sheish, Vitosav, Vachesaf. Okay, all these beautiful things, Arispat, Vavashesh, Vidarvis, Vachores, Vashkos, Bechazahav, and they drink from these beautiful golden vessels, Vechelim, Mekelim, Shonim, and they used, I don't know, different types of goblets, Vien, Machus, Rav, Kiyaramach, and the wine was overflowing, Vashisiyach, Hadas, Enonais. She wanted to do for everybody. So then why is he making this party? What was his purpose? So it says it's to show off his wealth, but to what end is he trying to show off his wealth? Is that it? It could be. And he just needed to show everybody how rich he was.
Well, it makes him more powerful.
Why?
I don't know, it's just the way it is.
The way of the world.
Why?
Right, why is it important to us? Yeah. Again, the Megillah doesn't need to tell us every detail about Achashverosh.
Also, he says that Yekati fell gdulato, how big he was.
Right. Right.
Not just rich, he was.
Right.
Powerful.
And then also, it's interesting that in the opening of the Megillah, it sounds like we're starting from the beginning of Achashverosh's rule. This is Achashverosh HaMolech, who is, you know, establishing his kingdom, Ehudu Batkush, and suddenly, we're 3 years into it, and he's making a party. So which one is it? Is it at the beginning of his rule, or is it 3 years into it? So the Malbim suggests as follows. Generally, when a person wants to show off wealth, it's a sign of insecurity. It's not a sign of power. Why do I need to show off how much money I have? Because I need people to relate to me through that. If I may want to share and I may want to provide for other people, but just to show it off. Which, and again, Megill tells us that was the purpose of the party. It says, "Baharoso was social kolma huso." The reason he was making this party was in order to show off his wealth. So, what was his insecurity? What was he trying to accomplish by showing off all this wealth? What was he trying to cover for? So, Malbim says that the first pasuk is the answer to that question, because he started out as Achashverosh. He didn't start out as Hamelech Achashverosh. He started out as a commoner. Chazal tell us that he was the one who took care of the horses for the king. He led a revolt. Seems to be in Yoni Dioma. It's popular these days. But he led this revolt, and through that, he was able to take over he was able to emerge as the new king. But he had no royal blood at all. So he starts off.
Historically?
I have no idea. So that's the beginning. By he bimei Achashverosh, he was regular Achashverosh, and Hamolech, and he was establishing his kingdom, Ehodu Vatkush, and maybe even expanding it beyond what existed before, for 127 countries. Now what did he need to do? Now he needed to strengthen his rule. Obviously things are not very stable after a rebellion takes place. He needs to establish that he is going to be the ruler over all of these countries. So what's the best thing to do to try and grab hold of the Malchus at the beginning? He decides, well, you know what? I'm going to marry the daughter of the previous king. He takes Vashti, and Vashti was the daughter of the previous king. He had overthrown her father. And now, on both ends, he sort of has a right to be the king. He has royal blood now because he's brought Vashti into the picture. And he's the one who led the rebellion and came out on top. And what he needs to now do over time is to solidify his control and his sovereignty as the ruler of all these 127 countries. What did he do? So one thing Malbim says is that's the stress on Shushan HaBira. He moved the capital, and that's why it's significant that it tells us that the capital is there. He doesn't want this to relate at all, or again, as slowly as possible, he wants to separate himself from the previous king and establish his own kingdom and his own malchus. So he gets rid of wherever it was in Persia that they had the previous capital, and he established his new one, Shushan HaBira, and he made Shushan into his new capital. And why was he making the feast now? For the same purpose. He couldn't do it right away, because if he did it right away, he was just going to show that he was reveling in what he accomplished. But he waits. Bishnas Shalosh L'Malcho. When things are beginning to settle down, he's 3 years into his kingdom now. Now he makes this big meal. What's the purpose of the meal? To win everybody over. He's showing off that his wealth, but he's also trying to win popular support. He invites everybody. He invites the commoners. He invites every single person, and he makes an extra party for the people in Shushan, because those are the people that are closest, that are the ones that are going to have, that he's going to hope are going to defend if any rebellion comes from the outside, from the other 127. Gaddafi's holding himself down in Tripoli. You got to hold yourself down in the capital. So he's hoping to hold on tightly to Shushan. So he's doing something extra to make sure that he wins those people over. And that's the Lasos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish. He makes sure that the party is uniquely suited for every single person. Every person that's at this party is going to feel special. And that's the introduction that the Megillah is giving us here. Then what happens, Gan Pasuk Tes, Gan Vashti HaMalkos HaSom Yishtein HaShim Beis HaMalkos HaShel HaMelech HaKashverosh. Vashti is also making herself a little party. Vayom HaShvi Ketov Lev HaMelech Vayayin. On the seventh day, he's very drunk. Amar Lu Mehumam Bizesuch Harvona Bigsa Vavagso Zesar V'Charkas Shivasa Sarisim. So he says to his seven servants, Hamshar Simis Pnei HaMelech HaKashverosh, the ones that help him, L'havias Vashti HaMalkos HaMelech B'chetzer Malchus, to bring Vashti in front of him in her royal crown, L'haros So'amim V'asorim Es Yofios, so everybody should see how beautiful she is, Kitab Asnarei, because she was beautiful. V'atimo'ein HaMalkos Vashti L'avob B'dvar HaMelech Asher B'yad HaSarisim, she refuses to come, V'aitzof HaMelech Me'od V'chamoso Bo'arovo. And he's angry, and the anger burns inside of him. Why did he want Vashti to come? What was the purpose? So what the Malbim explains is that at this point, Vashti was one of the few things that was holding him back from establishing his own rule. He needed her at the beginning because she was the daughter of the king, so he needed that to originally solidify his hold on the Malchus. But now that he wants to break off, and he wants to make sure that everybody knows that he deserves it because he's who he is, so the fact that she's from royal blood is holding it back. That's leaving the connection to the previous king. So he doesn't want that anymore. So that's why he says he wants to show off how beautiful she is. Because it becomes, why else? What kind of lowlife wants, it's his wife, and why does he want to show off his wife to everybody? And certainly if what Chazal is saying is true, that he wanted her to only come in her crown and be exposed to everybody, what was he trying to gain? And even the people that he sends, the Sari Sim, are the lowly servants. He doesn't send the nobleman to bring the queen. What was he trying to show?
I was also thinking about something else. Because as you just said, that through his overthrow of the government and his marriage to her, he was showing the connection between the two. But now he brings her out and he says to her, you think you are who you are?
Exactly.
I am who I am.
Exactly. And the Malbim points out that it's beautiful in the language of the Psukim. He says, what does Achashverosh say? He says, in Pasuk Yirach Lavi, Es Vashti HaMalka. He doesn't say Hamalka Vashti. He says first Vashti. People should realize that the reason that I married you is because you're beautiful, and that's why you're in the palace, and that's the only reason you're here. It happens to be that because you're Vashti and married to me, you're that's not. Why you're the Malka. You're not a Malka. You're not a queen on your own because you come from a royal family. And then what does it say? Vatimain Hamalka Vashti. Why does Vashti refuse to come? Because Vashti says, I'm a queen. I'm the one who comes from a royal family and not you. I'm not coming and demeaning myself in front of everybody else because I'm Hamalka Vashti. I'm first the Malka. I'm first the one who deserves to be here even more than you do. And I have to say that I'm Vashti and I'm your wife. I'm your wife also. And that was this machlokas and this rift between Achashverosh and Vashti. And that's why he was so upset. Because this was what was, again, his what he's been working on since he took over, and since he took the throne, was to ensure that everybody should realize that he is the one on his own who deserves to be the king. Now Vashti, you know, does something which flies in the face of what he's trying to do. It's holding him back. That's why he's so upset about it. But Bachamaso Ba'aravo, he can't tell anybody. That's why he's upset. It burns inside of him. Because he can't say, oh, I'm so upset at her because she didn't come and now she thinks she's the queen. And that's holding back my plans of making sure that nobody realizes that I didn't really deserve to be here. He can't say that. And the Gemara tells us, Chazal tell us, that what did she say when she refused to come? She sent back a message. Tell Achashverosh that he should remember that he used to take care of my father's horses. That's who he was. He was a commoner. And that chutzpah in particular on that point, which is so sensitive to Achashverosh, because that's what he's trying to accomplish, is what really touches a nerve with Achashverosh and causes this intense anger of Vayiktov. He's upset. V'chamaso ba'aravo. And it burns. The anger burns inside of him. So now we have to figure out, so what do we do with Vashti? So what does the Megillah tell us? Vayomer haMelech, so the king says, Zachachamim yodei haitim, to his different wise people, Kichein dvar haMelech, lifnei kol yodei udas v'din, this is what the king does in front of those who know judgment. Zacharov, Elov, Karshina, Sheisar, Admasa, Sarshish, Meres, Meretzron, Mevuchon, these seven people were close to him. Shivas, Sarei, Paras, Madai, Ro'ei, Pnei haMelech, Hayashivim, Yishnab, Amachus, the closest to the kings, he gathers them, Kedos, Malasos, Bamalka Vashti, to see what to do with this queen Vashti. Alasher lo asasas mamar melech Achashverosh be'arasarisim, because he didn't listen to the king. And the question is, why did he need to gather these people together in order to render judgment on Vashti? He's the king. No, they're doing all the movies. Support. Off with their head.
He wants their support.
Why? Why does he need it? If anything, if what he wants to
show.
But if what he wants to show is that he's the one, again, unless he was really afraid of a rebellion, then, again, if his support's really building up, then this is his opportunity. Say, off with their head, we're through with the royal family, they're not going to have anything to do with us anymore, and everything is fine and good. So why did he gather together all these people?
First of all, why does it have to name all of them?
Right.
Second of all, why does he need to have so many each time? Like, even the first time, just to go bid her to come, he has to gather seven people together.
It seems to me that in general in Persia there was something about seven servants, that anybody with royalty did have seven servants. We'll
seven
see that a little later.
Okay, run and go get me a drink. All seven of them had to go. Yeah,
okay.
One trusting the other. One not
I guess
the
maybe
other.
This was to accompany her. I mean, the point was to bring her. So again, I guess there was a certain amount that he had to show because she was royalty. So he didn't send these guys, if he had respect for his queen, then he probably would have sent the top noblemen to accompany her. So he sent the lowly ones. The seven seems to be some sort of Persian thing.
When that's in time, there's reference to doing things legally.
Maybe in court.
So that's one answer. That's one answer, is that Kichein Dvar HaMelech, that this is the words of the king, doesn't mean that that's what the king said right now, that Achashverosh is saying, was that the rule in Persia was that something which relates to the king himself has to be done by somebody else. He's not allowed to try a case which relates directly to him, to himself.
But even back in that first paragraph where they're drinking, according to the law, I mean, it's saying something about the kind of reign he wants.
Maybe. That could just mean that according to the law meant according to the custom of drinking. But this one, I think, you're right.
Thus forbidden in handling Vashti, in drinking.
The drinking, I think, means more of the minhag. Here, the Daf Vedin, and it's true. Some of them, of course, do say that's exactly what he wanted. The point was that it was the rule, and that he wasn't looking to break away from it. Others explain and it seems to have worked out very nicely in the Pesukim as well, is that Achashverosh was really caught in a bind right now. His drunken state was beginning to settle a little bit, and he realized that he's really stuck in a bind, because he realized that he really loves his wife, and he really doesn't want to get rid of her. And he wants to keep Vashti, around. The problem is that if he backtracks and doesn't punish her after she publicly displayed this chutzpah of not coming, then it's going to undermine his goal of becoming this sovereign, because she yields holds on to this power of being able to say, no, Achashverosh, I'm not interested. So now what's he going to do? He can't backtrack. On the other hand, he loves her and doesn't want anything to happen to her. So what he decides to do is he convenes a court. Now, if the court decides that she should be acquitted, that was their decision, and he can kind of have his cake and eat it too. He can, show that, okay, this was it was deemed to be that it wasn't enough of a chutzpah, but it's not me personally saying that she's allowed to behave in this way, and he can still have his wife. And that's why here, Malbim explains, that's why here he picks the people that are, and it stresses, hakarov elav, the people that are closest to him, roei pneimach, the ones who understood the king, and he was hoping that they would be the ones that would realize, either from his demeanor, from clues, from knowing who he was, that really what he wanted was that they should acquit her, and that she should be allowed to remain the queen.
So why didn't they?
So let's see. Very good. So let's see what happens. That's the next pasuk. What happened? Pasuk to Zion. Vayomer Mimuchan l'shnei ha'melech v'hasarim. So Mimuchan stands up in front of the king and the other officers, and he says, Lo al ha'melech levado avsav ashti ha'malcha. Don't think this was just a rebellion against the king. Ki al kol ha'sorim ve'al kol ha'amim ha'shev v'chol medinot ha'melech ha'chashverosh. It's going to spread like wildfire everywhere. Ki etzei dvar ha'malcha ha'chol nashim. All the women are going to hear what happened. La'abzot ba'lehem b'nehen. And their husbands will become contemptible in their eyes. Be'amram. And they'll repeat, ha'melech ha'chashverosh. Amra la'viyat v'ashti ha'malcha ha'fanav lova. And they're going to say that she didn't have to come, so we don't have to listen. We're going to have a bad situation on our hands. Now, if you notice, in the list of the people that were Hakarov Elov, where was Mumuchan positioned? He was the seventh name mentioned of all of the Tsarim. Now, suddenly, Vayomer Mumuchan. So, Mepharshim explain that everybody was ready to go ahead with what Achashverosh wanted, ready to hit. And this yokel, Mimuchan, stands up, and it says, he gets up in front of the king, in front of all the officers, and he blows the entire thing out of proportion. He says, well, this has nothing to do with you, this has to do with this global issue, that this is going to affect every single person in the kingdom. And once he says that, so now Achashverosh is kind of stuck. Because now that Mimuchan has changed the scenario, it's not just about him anymore. And if you'll notice, when Mimuchan says it, he specifically says that the person that rebelled against you was Vashti Hamalka. She, in your eyes, she's only Vashti who's secondary as the queen. And yet she was able to do this, so he wants to bring that idea back into Achashverosh's head, that you wanted to show this, so it brings the feelings back in Achashverosh, and also he's saying that this is going to affect every single person throughout the kingdom. So basically, he gets up and he ruins the plan for everybody. The first says that Kafat, he basically jumped in and changed the entire scenario. Okay, the first have different explanations why he did that. Whether it was that he had a daughter that he was hoping was going to become the queen, whether it was that somebody said that he was having the same problem with his wife, and the only way he could get around it was having this decree that I'll talk about shortly come out, and that would settle his marital disharmony also.
I mean, certainly by doing this, he's establishing his leadership among the.
And that's certainly something that he's trying to do also. Absolutely, but you see, even the way that he says it, the way he says it, ki al kol hasrim is against all the tzarim, al kol hamim, all the all the people, Bekol Medinos HaMelech, I mean, he's making this into as big an issue as you can possibly have. And then again, he rubs it in with this saying Vashti HaMalka, that she was, you know, she thwarted your plan of making sure that she was just Vashti, and secondary to that, the Malka. But if you notice, if we continue in Pasuk Yutes, he's also a little bit nervous. If it's good for the king, then this decree should go out. It should be decreed, it should be spread out. If it's good with the king, he wasn't so ready to jump up and say, you know, off with their head. He wanted to try and pin it back on Achashverosh. Just like everybody else, the other six guys who didn't talk up right away, the other six noblemen, they probably realized also, if this is what Achashverosh wants, then we shouldn't be the ones to interfere with his plan. Mordechai gets up and he's willing to interfere, but to be as brazen as to say, you know, go chop off her head, he at this point sticks in, no, Imal HaMelech Tov. He's putting it back into Achashverosh's hands.
So why doesn't anybody discuss it, argue it? There were six other people who...
Well, because the king was there.
Yeah, but the king didn't want this.
But if he's there, he can respond.
So why didn't he?
So, we'll have to try and understand. But it seems to be that
it's
one...
Because he says it, and then Vayitava Zavar, Bainei Melech. Like, okay.
Well, that's
it. There was no discussion, but he didn't want that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Let's see a little bit more. V'nishma piskam ha'melech asher yaseh b'chol machuso, and this should go out throughout the kingdom, ki rabahi, v'chol hanashim, and all the women nitznu yikar levaleihem, v'migadol v'akatan, and all the women will show respect for their husbands. V'itav ha'davar b'nei ha'melech asarim, and this was a good plan in the eyes of the king and the officers. V'yat ha'melech kidvar m'muchan, and he did as m'muchan said. So it seems to be, there's one other important line which Memuchan uses, which is in at the end of the Pasuk Tes, is he stresses that Vashti didn't come. He wanted to reestablish and reaffirm to Achashverosh that when you're going to pick a new queen, the fact that she's a queen comes from you, that you're the source of anybody becoming queen from here on in, because the Malchus really does belong to you. It seems to be that even though this is what he wants, again, this was something which had to be, it wasn't something that he could make public. This had to be something which he kept low-key. And if what Memuchan was saying is correct, and it seems to be that what Memuchan was saying at least scared Achashverosh enough and made him nervous enough that everybody's going to be saying, look what Vashti did, then that would undermine his plan. If everybody's going to know, and the word is going to spread, and everybody's going to act upon it, and everybody's going to say, okay, we don't have to respect our husbands because, and this is the part that I think was more important in Achashverosh's mind, I don't know that he particularly cared what was going to happen in everybody else's house. But what he didn't care about was that everybody shouldn't be talking about the fact that he had this problem with Vashti and she didn't come, which again, people will say, okay, well, the reason that she didn't come is because she comes from royal blood and she shouldn't be treated like that. So again, Achashverosh was caught even more deeply in this bind, and it seems to be he didn't think that he had a way out anymore. So he decided to go along. He decided to go along with the plan. So what happens now? They send out these svarim, these books, the words to every country, in the language and the writing of each country. What's this great decree saying? That every man should rule his home and speak the language of his own people. So, what was exactly the content of this letter that was being sent out? That the letter was the women should be subservient to their husbands. Okay.
And speak the language of your own people.
And speak the language of your own people.
What does that
have to command that to them?
I'm not sure what exactly.
Put in the mamaloshin of your province.
Right. It could be that's what it is,
no,
right? It could be defining.
But it says the rule was that you should know, but it says it twice.
Like
it says it was written in the language
right.
of your own people, but then it says
I'm not sure.
Each man should rule his home and he should speak the language of his own people.
Correct. I'm not sure. But I think the most obvious. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, why does it have to? Why does this have to be a decree? Pshita, that's the way it is. Of course, a man is in charge of his house. Every, as Rashi says, every person, no matter who he is, he's the one in charge of his house. So what was this? What was this changing? What was the purpose of the decree? And I think the more fundamental question, I think, is what the Malbim points out also, is that what was the plan was to write that since Vashti didn't come, therefore she was killed, and therefore everybody should realize, and all the women should realize that they should be subservient to their husbands. Where was that? What happened? The impetus and the content for this decree is missing from the actual decree. All the decree says is that the women should listen to their husbands. It doesn't say anything about the story of Vashti and Achashverosh. So the whole thing just sounds very, very strange. So the Ben Ezra explains that when it came to that Achashverosh agreed to the plan, as it says, but when it came to sitting down and he's dictating the letter to the different scribes that we'll hear about a little bit later, he realized that writing that I had this fight with my wife and everybody needs to know, it's like the... Never mind, I'm not going to say it. Fine, I'll say it. It's like these people like on Facebook, all right? Okay, I got into a fight with my husband. Oh, who cares? I'm not interested if you got into a fight with your husband. Twitter, whatever it is. I don't care what's going on in your house. You say whatever's going on in your house. Why do you have to tell everybody? So Achashverosh is going to write this letter and tell the entire world, oh, I got into this big fight. My wife didn't listen. I chopped off her head. So you should... So he realized that it's embarrassing for him to be writing this. But he apparently, again, maybe this is part of the going according to the letter of the law, he agreed that he was sending out this letter. So he sent out the letter. And the truth is, the letter did look foolish. The Gemara says that the foolishness of the letter is one of the keys to the unfolding of the story of Purim. The Gemara says, I think from Mish Lakish, Il Molei Igros Harishonos, if it hadn't been for the first letters, Lo Nishtayar Misonein Shal Yisrael Klum, the enemies of the Jews, referring to the Jews, the Gemara writes euphemistically when it talks about tragedy for Jews. If it hadn't been for these first letters, the Jews would have been destroyed. What does that mean? What's he talking about? So Rashi explains that had it not been that people saw this first letter and started to think, what kind of foolish king sends out letters that say a husband should be the ruler of his house? So now they became suspect anytime they got a subsequent letter from Achashverosh. They get a letter from Achashverosh saying, kill all the Jews on such and such a day. So Rashi says, had it not been for this first one, the Gemara is teaching us, is they would have responded right away, been ready to go, and maybe even jumped the gun and started early and started all the preparations. But from the fact that they realized that Achashverosh sends out silly letters, so they sat back and they waited and said, you know, let's see how things develop, let's see what happens. And that actually allowed for the entire story to unfold how it did. So what's interesting is that this first parak, which again seems to just talk about the lavish lifestyle and this strange story, has the obvious implications for the impending story, that now the place of for Esther to become the queen is open. But even, again, which I think is a major theme in Megillas Esther, is that there are a lot of things which don't fully make sense, and that seems to be part of Hashem working behind the scenes to allow for this news to unfold. Now this, you know, silly letter doesn't seem to saying anything, so the Chazal tell us that in fact lays the groundwork for the Yeshua that's going to come later.
I'm going back with something that's reminded me, where it says, "Umadaber Kilshon Amo." If you're just mentioning it to Rivka, that in different parts of the country, here in the United States, for example, up in the area of Boston, if they're referring to soda, they're saying tonic. And I remember when we lived in Boston for a number of years, and people knew we were going on a trip, they said, can you pick up us a tonic? And I said, well, you have a pharmacy here. You know, in the film, you have a pharmacy here.
Right.
They said, no, like ginger. Oh, that's it. So, Dilsonamo, like, there's language used in the South that we use in the North. So you have to speak the Mama Russian of the community.
Right. The reason for that might be, I think the Malvin points to that also, is that that whole pasuk has a stress on Medidam, Dinat Kirsava, doing it in the language of each country. Yeah. And I think what he says is that the reason that the Megillah would be pointing to that is because apparently it wasn't like that in the past. And this was a change. And this would also be part of Achashverosh is trying to tell everybody, you know, we're willing to accept you for who you are, as long as you, you know, accept me as the ruler. So, meaning, maybe he's stressing, you know, talk the way you want to talk, stick to your language, stick to your writing, whatever you want, but realize that, you know, on top of this entire, all these countries that are doing their own thing, I stand as the supreme. Okay. Let's see what we can do in Parak Beis, because otherwise we're really going to be behind.
This is very good.
Acharat Barim Ha'ela, after this, after this, Kishoch Hamas Tavanach HaChashverosh, and now he comes down, Zocharat Vashti Ve'es Asher Asasa Ve'es Asher Nigzar Allah, he remembers what happened to Vashti. Okay, so what did he remember? What's the significance? So most of the Mepharshim seem to assume that he remembered and he regretted it. And he realized that he was being foolish and he made a mistake. And he shouldn't have, again, we don't know that, we know from Chazal that she was killed, we didn't say she was killed, we just know she was removed. So as far as we know, she could have been stuck in jail for forever. But okay, Chazal tells us she was killed. I don't have a problem saying that she was killed. Again, you need Chazal to understand a lot of the things that are going on in the Megillah, even more than we usually do. But it seems that he regretted what happened, and he remembers the Gzeira. And then, what's going to happen now? So now we're expecting that his advisors are going to come and cheer him up and then help him out a little bit. So the young servants say to him, you should gather many virgin girls that are beautiful, and create a system of officers throughout the land, to bring all these women to the Shushan, the capital, to the house for the women, to Hege, and he'll give them the cosmetics and everything else they need. And whichever woman he finds fitting, and it was all good in the eyes of the king. Why is he taking advice at this point from the Narei HaMelech? From what happened to these guys? The Admasa, Sish, Erstar, Shish, Meris, Marsan, Mimuchan. All those guys, the seven ones that were closest to him, why is he not taking advice from the Narei HaMelech?
They didn't like it.
They didn't like it, so much so, some of them say that he killed them all.
Uh-huh.
He got rid of them, and whichever ones he didn't get rid of, ran as fast as they could, because they realized what fate he realized that they... So Chazal said that Mimuchan was Haman, and if he was, then maybe he was able to escape. And again, we don't hear from Haman, and we certainly don't hear from Mimuchan until next parak, which certainly is not going to be this week. So we'll have to figure him out later. But that's so he's left with these Narei HaMelech, and the Narei HaMelech give a plan that's appropriate for Narim. Look for the most beautiful woman. She'll be the most perfect queen. I don't know. There are no other qualities that you should be looking for if you're looking for a queen. And you're going to gather all these women. There are 127 countries. Even if you take only one woman from each country, he now has 127 women that he needs to start dealing with.
A Miss Universe contest. Are these Narei HaMelech, are these his buddies from the stable?
I don't know. Maybe ones that were, I think somebody says ones that were shining his shoes. I don't know, the ones that helped him out with things.
Really seeing Achashverosh as someone who never made a decision on his own, insecure.
So he doesn't, again, the Gemara has a discussion whether he was what they call Melech Pikeach, was he a wise king, or Melech Tipesh, whether he was a foolish king. And different events in the Megillah, again, the basic plan that he had at the beginning of Perek Aleph seems to put him in a pretty good light. You know, establishing his rule, bringing Vashti in, throwing a party for everybody, trying to win over the people, then trying to get rid of Vashti, which makes a lot of sense also, that he wants to get rid of her, or at least make sure that she's subservient to him and realizes her place. But in other times, it doesn't look that way. But, yeah, we'll have to hopefully see more about that. So they saw really nothing else in terms of what the queen was about, except for beauty, and again, with nobody else around to help him out, Achashverosh seems to go along with this foolish plan. So now we have a little bit. It might not be so foolish.
It may not, because the whole country, or all these countries, are going to be all excited about this wonderful contest. They don't have to think about anything negative.
Maybe, but I don't know. If he would have said, pick out the woman who has you know, the following four characteristics that maybe would help him.
Or another royalty.
Right, or
like... He didn't say another...
Well, that would probably make sense, because he doesn't want to end up with Again, maybe a different one wouldn't be as bad.
They all did then. They all
but they were all established, again, he was the commoner who rose to power. In other kingdoms, it was somebody who was in power as royalty who then wanted to bring somebody else in. Now we have a little bit of a parenthetical comment. We have an introduction to Mordechai. Okay, Mordechai is in Shushan. Asher haglom Yerushalayim, hagolah asher haglosom yechanyom, melech yudah, asher hagon Nebuchadnezzar, melech bavel. Okay, he was exiled from Yerushalayim. And now we have an introduction to Esther. Vayhi omenet hadasah, hi Esther bat dodo. And he was the one, omen, that he took care of her, raised her. Esther his niece, kiin lo avaim, because she didn't have a parent. Vanora yifas tov etavas maren, she's very beautiful. Ubimot avi avima, and when her parents died, the kocham or the chai lo levas, he took her as a daughter. As I'll explain that lo levas is lo levayis, that he married her and took her into his home as a wife. Now, what's going to happen? So the word of the king, the decree of the king spreads. And many of these women are being gathered, coming to Hegai. Esther is taken. Esther doesn't go. Esther is forced to go. The Chazal explained that there were two levels to the decree. At first, there was the decree that anybody should come, and then they realized that anybody who fits the bill should come, and then they realized that there were those who were hiding, and then they went around and were forcibly removing people. And Esther had tried to hide in Mordechai's home, and then again, for whatever reason, it was revealed to them that she existed, and they forced her to come to this contest.
And who was that guy? Repeated somebody.
He was the guy in charge of the charge of the women.
Yeah, but they mentioned his name in like one sentence three times.
Yeah, I don't know. He seemed to be that was his job, and he's going to be actually, as we'll see, maybe we'll see shortly. He has a little bit of an important role. Now it's interesting. Again, maybe it's just an allusion, but why does it say that she was taken to the Beis HaMelech, to the house of the king? Everybody else was taken to the Beis HaNashim, to the house of the women. Now, it does say that she went to Hegai, who was the one who was in charge of the women in the Beis HaNashim. So maybe, but usually the Megillah is more precise. So it is interesting that it seems to say that, there was something special even immediately about Esther being taken. Maybe we'll talk about that soon. The next pasuk and maybe the explanation. He became enthralled and was very impressed with Esther. And he gave her basically more of the cosmetics and all the other things, and seven servants more than anybody else got. She got this very special treatment.
Can I go back one second?
You can go back.
Why does she have two names, and why is she called Esther and not Hadassah?
I don't know.
One, I think, was
most, a lot of people
Persian
have a
name, they said.
A Persian name? I don't know.
That she was Jewish name. Or name.
Not sure.
No.
Mordechai doesn't have two names. I don't know. Nobody, who else in Torah has two different names?
Nobody in Torah has two names.
So there's got to be a reason she has two
it's
names.
True. No, the Gemara has justice from it, but I don't know if it explains why. The Gemara explains what the names tell us about her, but I don't think it tells us why she had two names. Not sure. Okay, we'll have to look into that.
Well, we can reconcile how she's being married to Mordechai and may end up married to the king?
As much as we can, we'll try. It may not, definitely not all today, but it's definitely an important point. And then, so Hegai is very impressed with her, and then it throws in, that Esther did not reveal her identity, because Mordechai commanded her not to tell. Why? I don't know. That's what it says, right? The implication might even be that Esther didn't even know why. The only reason that Esther did it was because, I don't know, Mordechai said it, and Mordechai is a good man. He's on the Sanhedrin, and he's my husband. Now, maybe she was listening to the decree that you have to listen to everything your husband says, and she listened to what her husband said. And what happened every day? Every day, Mordechai would walk in front of the place where the women were. But that's a Shlom Esther Maya Seba. It's to find out how Esther was holding up. Uvahagia tor na'arav and aron avol ha'melech. When each girl's turn came to come to the king, ha'melech ha'chashverosh, miketzei yoslo kedas ha'nashim shneimos ha'chodesh. It would take 12 months for preparation. Ki king yimlu yimeim rukayhen, that they would be all ready and spiced up and whatever else. Yishach ha'nashim ha'shem ha'namor. That the oils for 6 months. Yishach ha'nashim ha'bisalmenos, ha'mukay ha'nashim. They like hung out at the Dead Sea for a year. I don't know.
So what did he do the first year?
Who? Who? Poor Achashverosh? I don't know. He drank some more wine. I'm not sure. He waited. He was patient.
He was trying to gather all these women also.
Right.
They didn't just all show up in a day.
Yeah, right. But then he had to wait.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had a little bit of patience. He was mourning the loss of Vashti, so I don't know.
He had other women around there.
We don't know that. We can, again, from what's going on here, it certainly would seem that way, but we don't know. I don't know if we know that.
Yeah, but they're only one queen.
There's only one queen. But right, I guess.
One queen and you have right. Ultimates, but you always have a harem.
Okay, so maybe that was that kept him busy in the interim. Ubazan Araba al Amalek, and that's how they would come to the king. Iskoasher Tamari not saying lola voi mine anything they asked where they could take him based on Hashem based on us from the house of the women to the house of the king. Ba'erav Yivah, that she would come in the evening. Ba'bok Hishavan, she would return in the morning. Based on Hashem Sheni to a second house. Al Yad Shashgan, she sent Melch from Rapilag Shem. Okay, she had a status now more of a pilagish, so once she was together with the king, she couldn't just go back to being a regular person. But she couldn't come back to the king. Unless she was called. Uvahagia Torah Esther Batavichai Aldor Mordechai is a lot of, we reintroduced almost Esther, explaining who Asher Lekachlo Levas, again stressing. We'll figure out why all these details. Lavol Amalek, when it came to her turn, lo b'kshad davar, she didn't ask for anything. Kim et Hashem, mar hegai susam elch tzmar nashim. Whatever hegai told her, you have to take. So that's what she took. Bati Esther no se schein b'nei korovah. And again, it repeats the fact that Esther found favor in everybody's eyes. Bati lakach Esther l'melech ha'chashverosh ha'beit machuso. B'achorosh ha'asiru ha'chorosh teves. In the 10th month, she was taken to ha'chashverosh's palace. B'shnas sheva l'machuso. By the time it got to her turn, it got into everybody else. I mean, we don't know that she was left, but again, I got into a bunch of people. So now was the 7th year of his rule. Vayahav ha-melech es-ester mikol ha-nashim. Vatizachin v'chesed lefanov mikol ha-bitzulos. Vayosem kesem ha-chus b'roshel v'yamechat ha-chas vashti. She found favor in the eyes of the king, and he replaced Vashti with Esther. Now, again, from all these details, the fact that she kept finding favor in the eyes of the king, the fact that it's very strange that Haggai treated her differently than everybody else. He gave her more stuff. He gave her these servants. And as I mentioned earlier, the 7 servants was something that a queen was given. And yet she was treated in this way. Sounds that in a certain sense, Haggai kind of had this, whether it's an intuition or whether he was deciding that she was the one who was going to end up being the queen and kind of treated her that way beforehand. And Esther's almost giving off this impression. The other thing which is very strange is that the only requirement to win the contest, or I guess there were 2 requirements, was beauty and that she should be a bestula. And she was married, but she didn't even fit the basic requirements. Very strange. And then, the question, why was everyone so intrigued with Esther? So Chazal said she was, somehow this. So again, it's possible that she was that much more beautiful than everybody. Oh, it's possible. I don't know if it's possible, but there some of the Mepharshim suggest, I think this is the Malbim also, that there are women coming from all over 127 countries. So you can imagine that when they get to the Beit HaNashim, they have to fill out some sort of form, and they have to give their name, and they have to give their a little bit of details. I don't think they just called them 1, 2, 3, 4 until they got a million. They had to identify themselves. And that's very strange. You have this one nudnik, Esther, who comes, and she's not filling out anything. I'm not filling out any forms. I'm not telling you where I'm from. If I'm the one in charge, and the king is saying that I'm supposed to take care of all this here, so what do you do with the person that refuses? You throw her in jail. You threaten her. You chop off her head. Whatever the protocol was. You certainly don't treat her better than everybody else. So it's very strange that the fact that she's not revealing herself somehow seems to be working in her favor, and it went so far that in the next pasuk we'll read, the king makes a feast in her honor, and he gives some tax breaks. Why was he doing all this? Because even the king was trying to find out where she was from. So he was hoping that if he makes these feasts and if he gives these tax breaks, then whichever country she's from, you know, will take credit. Oh, this is all because of us, and then celebrate the fact that Esther is the queen. He was doing anything possible to try and figure out who she was. And then the Pesukim test is very strange. When he gathers the besulos, why? He found the wife already. So Chazal tell us, you know why he did it? Because he said, Esther's not revealing to me who she is. I'm going to make her jealous. What better way is there to try and make her jealous than I'm going to bring more women into the picture? And with that, maybe she'll reveal to me who she is. And with all of that, what does the Pesuk Chav say? Eina ser magedes molav tzaga sama. She's not going to reveal it. And that's the juxtaposition of, to the meal and to these second group of women, is that she's not saying anything. And she is refusing to say, Kasher Tzivah, Mordechai, as Esther said, that's my mar Mordechai, Esther, Osak, Kasher, Esavam, Noito. I mean, she's saying to Mordechai, again, seems to stress that the only reason she's doing it is because Mordechai said it. The king, and Magedes also, seems to imply like on a constant basis, just grammatically. So the king is constantly trying to find who she is, she's refusing, and yet, he's... Vashti did a lot, didn't do so much, and she had her, I don't know, her head chopped off or whatever happened to her, and Esther seems to be able to get away with everything. So what's going on? It seems so strange. The only answer seems to be what the Pasuk says. It says in Pasuk Yedzayin, Vayahava Melechas Esther Mikol Hashem. He loved her, and there's something about the fact that he loved her, just let her get away with these things. And
but look what happened when he left that Vashti. He
rooted
himself.
So maybe he learned the lesson.
Yeah.
The other possibility, and this would explain for Haggai also, is that it was exactly the fact that she wasn't revealing information that kept them intrigued as to who she is. What's she holding back? Why would she put herself when she knows she could be punished if she doesn't reveal her identity? You know, it's possible that that's going... She doesn't know that Achashverosh is going to be willing to tolerate this, and yet she's holding something back. Something about that was very intriguing to Haggai and to the king, and they were, in that sense, willing to actually play along. Now, why didn't Esther reveal her identity? What was Mordechai afraid of? So we don't really know. There's different explanations that she was from a royal family, and maybe that would keep her there. One of the Mepharshim explains that Mordechai...
not royalty.
So that would be meaning, but from Jewish royalty, which doesn't exist right now, it's not going to be a threat. That would be more of a covet. Alternatively, I think one of the first suggests that he wanted her to be able to try and secretly keep the Torah and mitzvot. So if she's not doing certain things and he doesn't know that she's a Jew, it's not going to be as obvious. If she knows she's a Jew, then you know, come Shabbos and come Kashrus and what she's eating, so everything is looked at under a microscope, and everything is examined carefully. But again, in the end, the answers are not very satisfactory.
And the fact that she was a basula, that she was not a basula, did they not know that? Because did they not know that she was even married?
At this point, they should know. I mean, he married her. He took her into his house at this point. It's strange. It's very, very, it's very strange. So basically, I think some explain that Mordechai and Esther were technically married and not really married. That's not what it sounds like from, that's not what it sounds like from Chazal.
But according to the English, it says that he adopted her as his own daughter.
Right. Chazal have a drasha that, again, it was already basically said that he was taking care of her. What does it mean as a daughter? That means kibas, they read as kibayas, as a house, meaning referring to a wife. That's how Chazal understood. Basically, in the end, these details don't make so much sense, and there aren't very good answers to it. And that seems to be also part of what's lurking in the background, is that these certain things, which, again, we can try and explain, and we can try, you know, get rid of each question with an answer that's not very satisfactory, but it all seems to be part of this picture that there are these subtle things going on that when we look at them, in hindsight, there's no way to understand it other than, you know, Hashem was working something.
Hashem's name is not mentioned.
Right. No, that's definitely true. Everything
is
correct.
Right. Everything is hidden. It's okay. We're just trying to run through Big Son and Sarah to bring to the end of Perek Days. So, I don't know, we have an attempt to be able to try and move forward a little bit. Okay. By Amim Mahayim, Mordechai Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech, Mordechai is sitting in those days by the gates of the king, Katzaf, Big Son, Vasera, Shnei, Sarasea, HaMelech, Mishamer, HaSafar, Vekshluish, Lechab, Melech, HaChashprosh, Big Son and Sarah get upset at the king, and they want to kill him. It almost sounds like the Perek should have ended already. What on earth does this have to do with anything that happened? The Perek until now has been about making Esther into the queen, Esther filling that role. What does this have to do? And the fact that it says Bayamim Ahem seems to undermine that and seems to try and connect the two. Is that no, in those days when Esther is being made the king, so Mordechai is sitting in the Shar HaMelech. Why is Mordechai sitting in the Shar HaMelech? Why wasn't he, you know, walking around anymore in the Chatzar HaMelech, trying, or by the Beis Hashem, or wherever Esther was, trying to find out what was going on? And why are Big Son and Seresh upset? The Megillah doesn't see, the event seems to be important enough for the Megillah to tell us, but the reason doesn't seem to be that important. Mordechai finds out, he tells Esther, and he tells to the king in the name of Mordechai, and they investigated and found that it was true, and it was written into the final works of the king. So again, it seems to be that there's a connection here. So Chazal explained that the reason Mordechai was now sitting was because Esther made this suggestion to Achashverosh that all evil kings always have a Jew as an advisor. Yeah, whether it was Nebuchadnezzar, whichever evil king it is, they always like to have a Jew around. And therefore, Mordechai now has a position in the Shar HaMelech. And again, it's fascinating because Esther is risking revealing herself. Meaning, how do you know who this Jew is? And yet, again, for whatever reason, she feels that this is important enough that she needs to tell Achashverosh that he should have this Jew there. And Chazal explained that it was that got Big Son and Seresh upset. It was that since Esther came and started shaking things up a little bit, now it's a new family of royalty, and now she takes this Jew, and this Jew is sitting here. That's why she was upset. They were upset, and they were really upset at Mordechai and Esther. So why did they want to attack Achashverosh? They should have tried to assassinate Mordechai. So the Gemara explains that what they wanted was that basically the position that they had as some sort of outside basic guard, not literally a bodyguard, but somebody supposed to supervise what's going on, was their position before. And then they had been demoted by Mordechai. So they thought the best way to deal with Mordechai was that if the king is assassinated, then obviously Mordechai is not doing a good job. And therefore, they would be put back in their place or be able to start an entire rebellion. Mordechai feels that for some reason it should be given over through Esther and not through him. Again, seeming that he wants to try and establish Esther as having a certain role, but at the same time realizing that there is this risk of, again, the Mordechai-Esther relationship being revealed. So again, the episode, as we know, is going to be important because we know what happens later. But the fact that the Megillah puts it in here and juxtaposes it to Esther being appointed the queen seems to be that because all this was connected and the Big Son and Seresh being upset and Mordechai sitting there because of Esther and then wanting Esther to be put in this position all fits in terms of the Perek into this general structure of trying to establish Esther as the queen so that when we start Perek Gimel with Haman, she'll be in a position to make things work.